Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and video show which brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. If you're new to the channel, please subscribe so you won't miss a new episode. I'm your host, Fritz Pusselmaker, and today I'm delighted and privileged to have a conversation with Paulo Batista from Brazil. Paulo, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Fritz. It's a pleasure to be here.
Allow me to briefly introduce who you are. You're currently the CEO of Alicera. And we'll talk about Alicera in a moment. But you also have a background in investment, in banking. For 7 years, you were the manager of a dental center, and you're educated in law. So quite a mixed and varied background. But the main discussion for today is going to be your passion to educate kids. Because that's what Alicera does. Briefly for the audience, can you explain what Alicera is? What's your ambition?
Perfect. So Alicerce is a very disruptive education-centered business model. Okay. What I realized, and I need to give some background. In my life, because my life story connects very well with what Alicerce is. And this is one first recommendation that I give. I think all entrepreneurs should do things that are connected to their personal story, that this gives you more resilience, more truth, more purpose in what you're doing. So, and you will see that it will connect the brief introduction that you've made of me. So when I was in college, I taught classes as a volunteer in an NGO that was supported by my college. For our global audience here, something close to what Teach for America would be, but very small, only for our college, our college in São Paulo. And that for me was a transformational experience, because I taught kids from underprivileged backgrounds in Brazil, and we're going to discuss a little bit about this problem in Brazil. And that was an in-person experience on how sad and how tragic it is for somebody to reach a mature age, 17, 18 years old, without the knowledge of basic skills of mathematics and reading and writing, and how that really becomes a huge problem for anything that you want to do, right? And for me, it was a shock. We always hear how access to education is unequal, especially in countries like Brazil, where I grew up. But when you see what it really is in the life of a young Brazilian, that's when you really understand that access to education is really the pillar of everything, right? You can connect every social problem, even environmental problem, to the lack of basic access to education. And we can talk about that a little bit if you want. So yes, that was a personal experience that when I was 18, made me realize that it's education, 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 SDG number 4, if you want, right? And of course, I started my career. I ended up going to the financial markets, like you mentioned. I went to investment banking at Goldman Sachs. Then I went to private equity. I learned a lot, and I got my share of success in that track. At some point in time, very young, when I was 27, something told me that I wanted to become an entrepreneur, right? I wanted to kind of have this leadership and sense of building something for the world. I always had that feeling in me, right? When I was a young kid, I loved playing with Lego. When I was a teenager, I loved playing SimCity. So I was always kind of a builder, right? And I had always had that pleasure in the building of things. And then I became an entrepreneur. I created a company called Dental Kramer, which was actually an e-commerce platform that sold dental supplies and equipment. So kind of the Amazon of dentists.
Okay.
And I was very lucky in bumping into that opportunity and that business model. And if you want, we can talk a little bit more about that. But in the benefit of time, That was very successful. We created the company in 2011 when I was 27 years old. In 7 years, it became a $300 million sales company, 50% of the dental market in Brazil. That was kind of the story that propelled me into the executive scene in Brazil, and also caught the eye of a multinational called Henry Schein. It's an American multinational company that I came to become a very strong admirer, probably one of the best companies I've ever seen. They are the 800-pound gorilla of that market globally. And they ended up acquiring Dental Kremer, my company, and turning me into their general manager, their country manager, and even regional manager. They wanted me to somehow help them expand into the other countries of LATAM where they were not present. And at that time, so the transaction happened in December 2016. January 2017, I kind of had a calling from inside saying, okay, now I need to look to education again. Now I have the means, right? Now I have resources. Mm-hmm. I was not thinking of leaving the company I had sold. I was just hired as their regional manager, and was very fond of the experience of working with them for a few years. But something told me that I had to look to education again, to this problem of education in Brazil. And so I spent the year of 2017 looking into the problem of education. And I realized from a macro perspective what I had seen in the micro perspective of the test prep classes that I taught as a volunteer when I was in college, right? And the macro scene is tragic, awful. I was surprised of how little the establishment really knew about how bad the situation was, how blind the country was about that problem of education, and maybe how blind we globally still are about how bad the situation is in certain countries. This is not a problem exclusive of Brazil. It's a problem that is present in every emerging and underdeveloped country, and even in some developed countries. We can talk about that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it is. Paulo, before I forget, may I ask you, you said you had a calling. How do you recognize that? Is it something which was very easy in your face, or was it something you need to think about? Because maybe there's some people out there who also want to know, hey, is this an itch? How can you describe what that looks like, how it feels like?
That's an excellent question, Fritz. And it might get a little spiritual. And I always try to deliver it in a very neutral way. I think it's a thought. It mm-hmm. starts with a thought that doesn't leave your mind, right? And for those that are more religious, this is probably how God talks to you, right? For those who are more from a psychological, a rational, skeptical line, this is probably your subconscious. It's probably your data processing happening in your subconscious at night and bringing to conscience ideas. So it starts with an idea that doesn't leave your mind. I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, and I see a lot of entrepreneurs trying to find a business plan. Oh my God, what should I do? And they do research. They try to copy business models. That typically does not lead to success. If you talk to every successful entrepreneur, to every unicorn, to every great company that was created, the spark was an insight, typically related to the experience of the person. So we should always look for those insights that come close to where we are, but not necessarily. For instance, the insight of Dental Kremer, the e-commerce I created, I am not a dentist. I've never been interested in dentistry before, and I had not worked with e-commerce. But somebody called me one day and said, hey, I need help. And I had to kind of do a study, a market study, that made me realize, wow, this could be an interesting market. And then what I learned is always feed your ideas. I think people lose some opportunities because they kill ideas too soon because they are afraid of it. Don't be afraid of your ideas.
Okay.
Feed your ideas.
Okay. I understand that, but does that also mean throw yourself in the deep end? Or
no,
no? Okay.
No. So feed your ideas. Don't kill them. Explore them. And I always like to think in everything that I'm doing, what is kind of the point of no return? And maybe I'll start telling the story of how I built Alicerce, because it's a great example of that. So in 2017, I wanted to do something with education. I started feeding that idea. I had no idea what it would be, and very different from what it is today. I spent the whole year of 2017 studying, diagnosing, talking to people that were working with that. And I concluded that nobody was really tackling the real problem, the real problem of lack of basic skills. People wanted to train tech engineers. People wanted to provide access to higher education. People wanted to do employability programs. But when you looked at the data, and I'll define the data to you as the result of the PISA exam. The PISA exam is a test that the OECD organizes for 70 countries, more or less. And Brazil is actually one of the worst in that ranking, even though it's not the poorest country in that ranking. When you look at that data, you could clearly see that only 4.3% of Brazilians were above PISA level 4, which is the level you need to become whatever you want to be it a tech engineer or a manager. It's what you would consider a reasonable amount of basic education. It's not a complete education, but it's a reasonable education. Only 4.3%. So the problem of, for instance, the lack of tech engineers in Brazil is not related to the lack of tech training programs. It's related to the lack of people with the necessary math skills and reading and writing skills to actually be trained as a tech engineer. So that is the problem. And many other problems are related to that. 70% of Brazilians are PISA level 1. That means that they can't do the 4 basic operations of math, and they can't read a paragraph and understand what they just read, the meaning of what they read. That makes them unable to do even basic tasks, manufacturing tasks. So when I realized that this was the main problem and that there was no solution for that, for insight number one, there's an opportunity to build this. Somebody needs to work on this.
Okay. Quick question in between. I do not know if that's related to the region, to the country. If I would observe this where I live, which is in the Netherlands, I think my first reaction is to go to the government and say, hey, you should do something about this. So
yes,
why did you consider other solutions than the solution to develop it yourself? And if not, why not?
I would say that is a great question. I would say that is why typically nobody looks at that, because this is a government thing, right? So it's a government thing. You're not supposed to look into that, right? The thing is, governments fail, and they fail more and more, right? Governments in Europe fail less in education than governments in Brazil, right? And less than governments in the United States around education. But even if you look into Europe, and I happen to know better the case of France, which is the country that we studied to test if we could get into Europe, and I would assume that the Netherlands are somewhat similar, but maybe they aren't. But we studied the case of France. The educational system of France is one of the best in the world, but it does fail in the tail, right? With whom? With the sons of immigrants, or the recent arrivals from immigrant families. And these systems struggle a lot in solving the problem for those underprivileged sons of immigrants, right? And have been failing for many years. They have been discussing this since the 90s. I lived in France in the 90s, and I remember this was a subject. This was a topic back then, and it still is, because it's a structural thing. You need a different approach into it, right? And governments have several difficulties in managing that. In Brazil, the problem is much larger, right? The problem in Brazil is a problem where it has become so bad because you had a breaking of the solidarity. So everybody that has means has gone into private education. When Brazil universalized the access to education, more or less you have 93% of kids in school in Brazil. Universalization is not an issue. But when the country did that in the 80s and 90s, there was a flight to quality. All the elite families took their kids to private schools, and you have 15% of the richest families in Brazil. It's one of the biggest private K-12 markets that study in private schools. What happens with that is that the top 15% of the country, which were the ones with political power, that are the opinion makers, and that have, let's say, that move society, are not suffering directly the issue of the public school, right? And what happened very naturally, and there's no mean plan around it, and I don't think there is, it's just a bad evolution of a bad legacy, the government does not fail students of public schools. Nobody fails. Everybody passes every year. Everybody gets at least a grade 7. And the rationale behind that is that if you fail students, they will evade school and they are better in the school than out of the school. So let's not fail them, because when they failed students, that was the number one reason why they abandoned school. If I'm not passing in school, I might as well work because this is worthless, yeah. Right? But what happened with that is that everybody goes through school and learns nothing. Like I was saying, 70% of young kids, recent graduates of high school, according to PISA 2018, before the pandemic, can't do the 4 basic operations of math, which is something you learn in second grade. And they have a high school degree. This is how crazy it goes. So the government has a big problem in its hands. They can't fix it. Because if they tell the truth and start failing students, they have to fail everyone. And the political pressure is huge, right?
Paulo, so, I got that. You're so passionate that, I mean, on one hand, I just want to let you talk, but a couple of things which I'm quite curious about. Mm-hmm. Two questions. You describe what the situation is, which needed to be fixed. So mm-hmm. I'm interested to find out what exactly have you done. So what do you Perfect. Do? And also, if you can give light on how does the government, how does the rest of your environment, Brazil, look at what you're doing? Do they appreciate that? Do they applaud you? Or is this something? I can also understand that maybe we say this is actually not what we want to do. I don't hope so. But so what do you do now? Yeah. And how is that perceived?
Very good. So we did something very basic, but that nobody had done. I asked myself, who is number one and number two in PISA? China, tier one cities, and Finland. What is the only thing in common between the two? They do a structured after-school tutoring program to level up students that are lagging behind. That is the single common thread between what happened in tier one cities in China and Finland, who are respectively number one and number two. In Finland, it's a government system. The government provides that after-school tutoring. In China, it became a huge for-profit business. The after-school tutoring companies of China, very famous, Tao Education, New Oriental, they became decacorns. That's what gave me the insight. This is the solution from a technical point of view, right? And two, this can be a for-profit business. And as a for-profit business, it's much more scalable than a non-profit. And that's when I said, this is amazing. This is when the strongest insight happened. I said, okay, this is it. Somebody had to do it. And then I had a personal journey in finding out that I had to personally lead that. But to answer your question, initially, I thought that government would not be a part of it because of all the bureaucracy involved and all the complications involved with government. And the initial business model was centered on a B2C process like in China. So we set up learning centers in the poor neighborhoods of Brazil, and every family pays to enroll their students from 5 to 18 years old, their kids, and we would provide them with that leveling up of basic skills, right? And the other component of the business model would be to reach out to companies to build ESG projects around that issue, and also big philanthropists, right? And companies are very prone to invest in that, I guess anywhere in the world, but particularly in Brazil, because they pay the price of that unqualified labor, as we were discussing. So we started doing a lot of programs with companies to level up kids from 14 to 18 years old on those basic reading and writing and math skills, together with labor skills, and then the company would hire those young kids in the end, which is perfect because this is the bulk of what we do now. And this is perfect because for the student, they receive that free education, and they also get a job in the end, which is the ultimate ticket to a better life, right? And remember that in Brazil, like in many other poor countries, you have 30% of youth unemployment. And what people don't talk about is that you have 30% of youth unemployment because people don't pass basic reading, writing, and math tests in admissions process, even of operational jobs. But then it changed because when government started seeing that what we do works, they started looking for us, okay, I need you, right? And now we have, the company is very recent, was created in 2019, so we are 4 years old. But now we already have 5 contracts with government entities where they pay for that. And we do that, let's say, in a fill-in process where we do it inside the public school, which is much better than for the kid having to leave the government school to go to our center, because we do it in the same building and you even provide a better service of logistics to the family. So, yeah, this is what we do. And now government is a part of it. And government has been a great partner. Initially I have to say, Fritz, I had my concerns that how would investors react to this government component. But then I realized that impact investors, which are growing more and more, not only are not worried about that, but they appreciate that. They like that we are helping government and not competing with government or trying to kill government, which some companies try to do.
What you're describing is a beautiful example of public-private partnership to get the job done. And it also reminds me of something I'm involved in Belgium, where I support the Belgium innovation community, where we're looking at how can we develop civil entrepreneurs. So, because it's what you're doing is maybe demonstrating, showcasing how you can introduce an entrepreneurial mindset with an opportunity and get it done. Yes. That's what I'm hearing.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think this talks a lot to the trend of GovTech, of impact businesses. At the end of the day, what you want, it's to solve a problem. And you want to do it in a profitable way because you realize that as a profitable business, you have a better chance of succeeding, of creating the right incentives for the team, of having the right controls in place, of having the right governance in place, of having the right mindset in place. But if you want to solve the problem, you're not as concerned as a traditional investor that government is a part of the business. You actually like that because you are enhancing the impact that you're providing. And it happens. We are inside the public schools. And a lot of teachers of that school look at what we're doing and how we're doing, and they start improving their classes because the kids say, whoa, okay, I love the after school class. It automatically and silently provokes the teacher to say, oh, what are you liking about that? And they look for us, they want to be trained, they understand what we're doing, and they start implementing things in their classes. So, okay, it's really that multiplying effect of just being at the right place, doing the right thing, you know?
Because you trigger me also a discussion I had, train the trainer program, so it rubs off on teachers. So does this also mean to multiply your own business or to make certain that people get educated? It's not just providing the kids the education they obviously are very interested in, but also train the people who train the teachers. Is that
Exactly.
something you're considering or doing?
So the thing is, the secret sauce of what we do is that everything works, right? So the teacher is trained in the right way, empowered to do the right things, and the classroom setup is ideal for what he needs to do with the kids. What we've learned, we've done at the request of some partners, saying, "Whoa, this is amazing! I help a school. Can you train those teachers?" And we've done. We took the training that we do to our own teachers, and we taught those teachers, right? And they love it. But we measured the impact, and it's not right because it's not just about the training of the teacher. They don't have the right empowerment. The system to which they belong do not allow them to work as our teachers do. The setup of the class is not the same. So what it has a positive impact. We've done it. It's always inspirational. They love it. They take things from that. They apply to their classes. But the maximum impact is when we do the full thing that we do, because then it really reinforces itself. But we do. When people ask us to do training to their teachers, we do. What we end up doing that a lot organically, because I didn't mention, but through the provocation of companies, the companies that were started doing those ESG projects around workforce development, they started to provoke us, "Can you please do the same to my employees of 18 to 40 years old?" Because we have them working in our call centers, in our factories, and we know that they don't know how to read, write, and math. Can you do the same to them? And then we developed a program for adults, which is we call it a reskilling program, and it's a shorter period because the after school fills the entire afternoon. The adult program is 1 hour per day, very quick, very fast, steep and fast results, and not a long-term program. And for that program, we use adult teachers. We use teachers from the school system, right? And it becomes extra income for them, right? Whereas for the after-school program for kids, we use, like Teach for America, and like my own experience, we use college students or recent graduates, right? So with that, our adult programs, which is more or less 40% of our student base, is actually a machine of retraining school teachers, because they come, they get the training to do our program, but in the morning they're teaching kids, and they of course apply with the limitations that the setup provides. They apply the principles we teach them of active learning, of actually measuring learning, and helping a little more the ones that are lagging, and also empowering the ones that are moving faster to go even faster, which is a mastery program, right? Which is very different than what is typically done, at least in the US and Brazil. Europe is more advanced in applying those principles.
Also, in a completely other discussion I had with somebody, we talked about the need for 21st century skills, and the impact of digital technology. What you train, what you teach, can that be considered as 21st century skills, or is it more
Absolutely.
classic?
Absolutely. So we are what I call PISA tracking, right? We work with the skills of PISA, which are reading, writing, math, some science, and they try to include in the test what one would call some concept of social emotional learning. So we go beyond that. We do a full social emotional learning program, very integrated with our knowledge training program. So we work on three pillars. One is the what we call the hard skills, so reading, writing, math. We teach English as a second language. We're developing Spanish now, which will also allow us to get into developed markets and Spanish-speaking markets in the future. That's one core. The other core is social emotional learning. So we base ourselves on Kozel, which is for us the gold standard for the United States, which has a similar demographic background than Brazil. So it's a helpful benchmark. And we also do what we call discovery, which is just expanding cultural repertoire and providing those wow moments that open the mind, right? And this is now neurologically proven that wow moments enhance cognitive skills. And all those three pillars are connected to what we call a life project, which allows us to develop growth mindset. So in summary, what we do is 21st century skills combined with growth mindset. So it's essentially that. And your question is very good, because more and more, this is what we need. With ChatGPT, AI growing, what you need are those skills. The rest is going to get easier and easier to have access to. But one thing is to have access. The other thing is to be able to apply that. And look at the stats I shared. 70% of Brazilians cannot read a paragraph-long test and understand what they just read. ChatGPT is useless to them, because they're not going to be able to understand the paragraph that ChatGPT spit out for them, right? So if we don't fix that problem, we're going to go into a dystopic world where you're going to have an elite that's going to be able to leverage more and more on those tools, and a bottom of the pyramid that will not be able to leverage on those tools will be left behind and is going to create more and more social problems. And then you can connect that to a geopolitical trend. What's going to happen? Are we going to have a breaking of solidarity and populist behavior to calm down the masses? Or are we somehow going to get together and solve that problem? Like I mentioned, if we look at Brazil today, the track record is very bad. If you look at the society, even if there was no intent or design, we allowed for a huge private education market that caters to the top 15%, and the bottom 85% are being left behind and being fooled, receiving degrees. You get the high school degree, you learn nothing, but you got your high school degree. So, okay, I'm happy, I have my degree. But then I can't pass an admissions test to be a factory worker, because the HR gives me a file to fill out and I can't write a paragraph long text. So we need to fix this problem. If we don't fix this problem, we're not going to fix anything.
Yeah.
And think about the environment. I talk a lot about this in Brazil, the Amazon forest. The Amazon is worse than that national average. More or less 80% of kids in the Amazon are PISA level one. How are you going to teach sustainable practices if people can't add or subtract or read a paragraph long text? You're going to be fooling philanthropists. They're going to pay you to teach entrepreneurship in the Amazon. You're going to go there. You're going to deliver the course. People are going to watch and they're going to get the certificate, but they won't be able to learn or apply that to their local activity. And they're going to continue to be predators of the environment because they can't do anything more sophisticated than that.
Hey, Paulo, in this whole endeavor, I absolutely see a calling. I would just you share with us, actually what inspired you. It's the personal experience. I also see the role models you mentioned, Finland and China. Are there also people in your environment you go to, which coach you, which tell you the honest truth, which direct you? How do you organize that for yourself?
Oh, absolutely. I'm a fruit of mentors from the very early age. I think that is the biggest privilege I've had. I did not inherit a lot of money, but I was part of this bubble of Brazil where I had access to great mentors. And I've had this since my early age, and I still use that a lot. YPO, as you know, is a very powerful tool yeah. for that. I'm a lover of YPO. It's a peer-to-peer mentoring in the end, and it's the and great source of mentoring.
Could you maybe explain to the audience what YPO is?
So YPO is one of those lucky moments I had, right? When I created the e-commerce company that I briefly mentioned, I was invited. I quickly qualified to YPO. It's Young President Organization. So it's an organization of CEOs that become CEOs young, and that is defined as less than 46 years old. You have to be nominated to enter that organization. I was at the board of a company of a YPO CEO, and he invited me to YPO, and it changed my life because I had structured, consistent peer-to-peer mentoring. You establish yourself in forums, groups of up to 10 people who are all CEOs, young CEOs of different ages, right? Because once you get in, very hard for you to get out. So you can stay in YPO up until you're 80 years old if you desire. And you learn from each other. There's a structured discussion format, a forum, where that is favors for you to learn from each other and to mentor each other. And that helped me a lot because it's unbiased advice, right? And from 9 persons at the same time. So it also controls projection, and that's, you get different perspectives from the same problem at the same time. So it's a board that works, right? Okay. It's a board of people that do not have fiduciary duties, that do not have any personal agendas to your topics. There's a non-conflict rule, of course. So I'm a fan of YPO. I assume a lot of your audience is YPO. They know what I'm talking about. But I also have an advisory board. So I have 2 boards. I have my formal board with fiduciary duties who are serving a purpose of governance, where they are there to protect my investors and to put me on check and make sure I'm doing the right thing and create those gates of approval that also make you prepare better. And I have a different board, which is my advisory board, that helps me and where I can go and be vulnerable and say, I need help, because they have no fiduciary duties. They have no power over me. They're not shareholders of my company. They're just people that advise me, you know, and I recommend that structure to everyone.
Okay. And that's, I would say, good advice to anybody out there, not have your formal board, but if you want to start up an entrepreneurship or anything else, also get informal people who are just going to advise you, no strings attached.
Yeah.
Hey, exactly. A couple of questions at the end, because I mean, time is moving so fast, listening to you. Now you still have lots of years ahead of you. Your gut feeling now, is this your last stop? Is this what you meant to be doing? Or do you see yourself going to other opportunities? Because you've done this before.
I am absolutely convinced that this is the last startup that I will create, right? First of all, the market is huge. The potential is huge in Brazil. And I see this, and I have the ambition to make this a global endeavor, a global business, a platform that will leave a dent in the world. You know, I think this is the calling. This is what needs to be done. And I hope to deserve it, right? To be there until the end. Even if at some point in time I get too tired and I move to the board, or somehow I am sure that I will never find something as exciting as this, right? And I definitely see myself taking it lighter. And at some point in time, I don't know, when I'm maybe in my 60s or my 70s, maybe wanting to slow down and maybe doing other things than just building. But I don't see myself doing something else, okay, because this is so big, such a strong part of what I am, of who I am, that it will be very hard to find something that I am more passionate about. Maybe the one thing that I would be more passionate about would be at some point in time, and actually I'm already doing that, helping other people follow a similar path, right? Help other people find their purpose and find a big social problem to fix, or environmental problem to fix with a business solution. So that's why I talk about social impact or impact entrepreneurship at large. That's why I get involved in that inside YPO, because this is something that I think more people should be doing, you know, because it's part of the global solution. And there's an education problem that I'm deeply involved with. but there are 17 SDGs, right? Access to basic education is only one. You could argue that we're also helping 8, which is decent employment, but there are 15 others, and each of them have room for, if not one, 3 or 4 business models that will be change makers in that issue. So,
hey, Paolo, then one last question. I don't know if this is going to be a short, brief answer, but because I already seeing you giving, you already giving advice. But what's your top advice, your number one advice to young people starting out their own journey? What's the thing you would like to give them?
I would say have good mentors. Find a way to find good, trusted mentors that you respect and listen. That's how we humans were built to learn and grow. If you think of the caveman, we learned from the elder, right? And the modern version of the elder is not the elder, is the successful person, which can be an old person or can be a young person, right? So find good mentors. No matter where you came from, find good mentors as fast as you can and expose yourself to that. That will move your brain. And as you get insights, feed them. As you get those callings, those insights, don't kill them. Don't be afraid. Until you reach the point of no return, until you have to quit your safe job, until you have to move geography, until you have to do irreversible things, feed your ideas. And what I've learned in many stages of my life is you can learn a lot and you can make a lot of progress before you make irreversible decisions. But a lot of people, just afraid of maybe being tempted of make that irreversible decision, kill the idea very early on and don't feed that idea, and the opportunities pass by. And then they see someone else did it. Someone else had the same idea. And then they feel frustrated. Why didn't I do it? Because you killed the idea. You didn't feed it, right? So that's what I would say. And maybe one final thing, which is a mantra for me, not my creation. You probably heard it before. Hope for the best, plan for the worst. So in those irreversible decisions, yes, be bold. Believe that it will happen. It will be successful. Get it done. But always leave 1 hour to say, okay, what if it doesn't? What happens to me? And have a plan for the worst, which is a plan for when things fail, but also emotionally accepting that things might fail. And if you are emotionally prepared to fail, you have a better chance to succeed.
Paolo, I think I've just listened to a great, great mentor. I want to thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Fritz.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.